And we're back here on Unusual Sources 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton on the FM dial and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca, our online streaming service. Now, this is a crisis happening right now in Palestine. And of course, at times like this, our program has done a lot of direct interviewing right to Palestine. Within Gaza, we've interviewed organizers in Canada and around the world, and we're of course continuing in that tradition this week. And I'm very pleased to say that we have Ihab Lotayef, an organizer with Gaza's Ark, which of course you can find at gazaark.org. So Ihab, thanks very much for being on the program with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, your name, Ihab, has become well-known in discussions of Palestine. You've been involved in a number of radio interviews along with other members of Gaza's Ark. You know, we can talk about Gaza's Ark a bit later on. Many of our listeners are familiar with this excellent project, and of course it has been affected by recent events there. But I guess that's what we should start by discussing. You know, it's Hamilton here. The summer weather is very nice, and we might be a bit sluggish in catching up on the news or being fully aware of what's going on in the world right now. But you know, if you're an activist, there's a million articles and news stories circulating about this recent attack on Gaza and this escalation of the situation. So I was wondering if you could start out by telling us what exactly is happening in Gaza right now. What's happening with this incursion?
Well, what's happening in Gaza right now is that Israel is using its military might, extreme military superiority, to punish the population of Gaza, a civilian population far more than the militant population, to punish them for allegations that Israel has made and that are not substantiated in any way. And this is just a part of the bigger picture, that the only thing Israel is interested in is to subjugate or push out the Palestinian population from all of Palestine, not only Gaza. But Israel is taking its time and doing this colony by colony, bombing by bombing. And as long as the world is silent and looks the other way when Israel does it and gives them or takes their lame excuses for why they're doing it, it will continue, and the victims are the Palestinian people and the generations of young Palestinians who grow up under this inhuman and unacceptable situation. And we as people living in countries where the governments always support Israel without question, have a lot of responsibility on our shoulders.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you tune into CBC, I mean, you mentioned we're in a country that uncritically supports Israel, at least in terms of the government. When you tune into CBC, there's stories and video about Israelis running away from rocket fire. You know, people parking their cars, stepping to the side of the road when an air raid siren happens, or perhaps a story about a wedding that's been interrupted by rocket fire. You know, the Palestinians, they don't have many shelters. And I don't know how much coverage we're getting about what's happening in Palestine. So what is the humanitarian situation on the ground with regard to this air, land, sea assault?
Well, this is again, I'm happy that you're mentioning it this way, because we know we got used to the fact that our mainstream media is attracted to blood and attracted to deaths before anything else, except when it comes to Israel-Palestine. Because if you look at the situation in Gaza right now, over the last 48 hours, more or less, there were 45 people dead in Gaza. Over 300 people are injured at different levels of injuries. And there isn't one death or one injury up to now reported in Israel. And although life or one human suffering is equal to the other or should be equal to the other, it's still very astonishing that we don't hear a word, except if we do, from the CBC, it is after 30 or 40 seconds into the report, where at the beginning, as you said, the focus is on the Israelis in cities or towns that are reachable by the primitive rockets that are fired from Gaza that are running to shelters. And as you said, the people in Gaza don't have shelters, and they've given up trying to even find shelter, because the Israeli military power is so far superior than what they can hide from or what they can escape from. And Gaza is extremely densely populated, that when you fire, and what the Israelis try to convince the world that it's surgical attacks, when you fire on a three-story building to kill one particular target person, well, even if you do kill him or her, then you also kill quite a few children and quite a few teenagers and quite a number of women and old people. And this is what's happening in Gaza right now. I've been following the news on the last 48 hours, as well as communicating with the close friends and other people we work with in Gaza. And they're not afraid for themselves. The thing that is mostly affecting them is that the children are panicking. They can't sleep. They wake up with nightmares. And this is not happening for the first generation. This is the third or fourth generation that's been treated that way by Israel. It is totally inhuman for us to be talking about anything other than these deaths and this military punishment in a totally unequal situation, and focus on the rockets that are fired from Gaza as an act reaction to extreme punishment and extreme violence happening from Israel. We focus only on that, and we forget the root cause of the problem.
Now, you mentioned repetition. In a sense that Palestinian children have been through this before. This is not the first generation to experience that. And you also talk about lame excuses by Israel for its escalation. It seems to me that there's incidents that happen, incidents that are seized upon by the Israeli government to then launch major incursions into Gaza and other parts of Palestine. Usually you see ratios of 10 or 20 Palestinians killed for each individual Israeli. And Jonathan Cook in today's Counterpunch, you can go to www.counterpunch.org. He mentions that in certain coverage here in the West, you will find photos of Israeli families grieving or worried and things like that. But when they refer to families of Palestinians or Palestinians who have been killed, they just show random pictures of a demonstration of angry people. So when it comes to Israelis, you see pictures of families and suffering and empathy, but you are given different photos in newspapers on the issue of Palestinian suffering. So it's very hard, it seems, for our media to even paint equivalence in this issue. But on the issue of repetition, do you think that, this is sort of an Israeli strategy where they can just further punish Palestine and send military forces into there upon certain pretexts?
I think that we have to be clear on the bigger picture so that we can understand what's happening today in Gaza. Israel has lots of interest in Gaza, and although Israel withdrew its forces from the ground in Gaza and its settlers from Gaza in 2005, any observer would realize that this was a strategic move for a less effort and more control over Gaza on the long run. Israel is interested in Gaza not only because this small, tiny strip of land on the shores of the Mediterranean, but also because of the gas and oil fields that have been discovered in what is rightfully the waters of that would belong to Gaza if it was an independent territory. So Israel does not want to give up Gaza. It did never want to give up Gaza. It doesn't want to give away the West Bank either. Israel is hampering any and every chance of peace. And you can quote John Kerry for that himself after his return from his last attempt to broker peace, when he put the blame on the Israelis right away, although he had to retreat very quickly because we know the strength of the Zionist lobby in the States and in Canada as well. So within that context, when we look at the situation that way, we realize that Israel does not want peace, and it only wants a Palestinian client regime that would play its game all the time till at the end of the day it can have its way. And that's what has been happening over the last couple of years, many, many years, not only a couple of years. And when Israel heard that there were signs of a unity government in Palestine, something that would call it to the test, actually, from the point of view that there would be a more serious attempt for more serious peace negotiations, and which could probably expose the real strategies that Israel is taking in this so-called peace process. Israel was very unhappy. Netanyahu was extremely unhappy, and he started attacking the unity government and attacking particularly the Hamas faction without them doing anything. This falls directly, again, as the pieces of the puzzle fall in place, directly with what happened after this sad and very regrettable incident of the kidnapping of the three Palestinian, the three Israeli teenagers in the West Bank. What we're hearing now is that the Israeli government knew from the very beginning, or early enough, that those kidnapped kids have already been murdered. But it covered up on this information, and it used the story to fuel anger and create a system of explicit racism and nationalism and public acceptance of attacking Gaza under the pretext that there is knowledge of who and there is proof of who kidnapped those teenagers. And quickly enough, it started bombing Gaza and started killing people in Gaza long before the authorities in Gaza or the Hamas government in Gaza started shooting rockets back at Israel. So if we look at the full picture, we realize that it's not as simple and clear-cut, and Israel is not justified in any way, as some of our media and politicians like to show it.
Certainly, Gideon Levy had an excellent article recently where he said just that thing, that the Israeli government has used this time to stoke up so much hatred and fear in the Israeli population that it has led to that brutal killing, the burning alive of that one Palestinian that was mentioned that has been investigated. And people, ordinary Israeli citizens that demonstrate high levels of extremism or perpetrate acts like that one are being punished or investigated in the court system. But Gideon Levy is saying that the leadership of Israel is not being taken into account on that. And, the way these issues are being reported on, one BBC Middle East correspondent, Kevin Connolly, actually said that the killing of those three Israeli youths stands above the killing of Palestinians in the last few months and in the last few conflicts. So what he said was, there was a special kind of chilling factor, a cold-blooded calculation to that crime that slightly sets it aside from the other waves of violence that we report on across the Middle East. So, you know, he's saying that incident was different. It was worse than other incidents in which Palestinian youths and children were killed. So it is very, very difficult to get U.S. media, Canadian media, or British media to treat casualties fairly in this. There does seem to be a privileging of Israeli casualties.
And again, I mean, I think I need to say it here. And again, although nobody wants any civilian to be hurt, the world totally ignores that the settlers are living illegally, are settled illegally on land that is not theirs, and they have been there for generations, and they are institutionalizing the occupation, the full fledged theft and colonization of the land. Nobody refers to that when they talk about the core issue of the problem. And it really gets one sometimes when you only listen to or watch mainstream media to be astonished why is this, there's so much coverage and there is always looking the other way about the bigger picture and where is the core of the problem. The occupation is the core of the problem. The settlement is the core of the problem. The punishment of the Palestinian people at checkpoints or across the West Bank is the core of the problem. The blockade of Gaza, the starvation and the unemployment in both Gaza and the West Bank are the core of the problem. If we want to solve the problem, if our politicians, if any politician anywhere around the world has the interest of Israel in mind, I'm not going to say the interest of the Palestinians, the interest of Israel in mind, then they have to try to solve the core problem, so the core problems in plural, so that the suffering ends.
Yeah, I think what wraps this all up is, one of the core problems besides the occupation is that Israel doesn't seem to be comfortable with its borders. It wants them to expand. It wants them to get bigger. And it feels free to go beyond its borders in, land-based, air-based, and naval-based incursions. So, we've gotten used to these high casualty numbers from Palestinians in these last major operations. Since 2008, there's been at least two major incursions. Operation Cast Lead was one of them. And we have these very high death counts from the Palestinian people. And what's interesting, or what's very illustrative about it to me, is that when Israel says that it's gonna have a major operation and a major conflict, it's calling the shots, because there can be incidents. Like in 2006, Israel turned a routine prisoner exchange into an invasion of Lebanon, and they've turned back and forth rocket fire into these kind of escalations in 2008, 9, in 2012, and so on. So it's Israel that gets to do that. If something bad happens, Palestine does not launch air, land and sea assault into Israel. They don't have that capability. They don't even have the capability to defend themselves. So if something bad happens, it's Israel that attacks Palestine and not vice versa.
Absolutely. Again, we're back to the David versus Goliath syndrome. And when you're a giant, a mighty giant, you don't really think. I mean, when I hear referring to what's happening now or similar previous instance as a war, it really is not a war. It's usually a punishment of a civilian population. This is a punishment of the population. It is not a war in any shape or form, whether it's done remotely by shelling and bombing and attacking with helicopter gunships and F-16s, or even when the troops go into the territories, because they have no army equivalent or even comparable army that stands in front of them. At least they nothing for them to be concerned about. They do have casualties, but again, if we go back to Cast Lead, we have to remember the casualties on the Palestinian sides were 1,400. The casualties on the Israeli sides were 13, if I remember correctly. That's 1 to 100. That is not a war.
No, and it is. This is somewhat depressing, or very depressing, to discuss. And then you have the additional fact that in a David versus Goliath situation, the English media would like to favor Goliath's side and testimony. But, people are working to rectify this situation. There are a lot of solidarity activists all around the world. The movement has been growing for quite some time, accelerated, in fact, because of these Israeli incursions in the last 4 or 5 years. From here to the United States, to Ireland, to Turkey, to Australia, you can find movements anywhere and everywhere on this. And one of Canada's main contributions has been by helping Gaza's Ark, this whole Gaza's Ark project. And that's an oasis of inspiration and hope amidst all this destruction. And I know that the purpose of the Ark is to allow Palestine to engage in trade with the outside world, despite the illegal blockades that are imposed on it. You're going to build a ship, put trade goods on there, and get it out there. This project has been delayed a number of times, and I imagine now with this massive incursion, once again, the project has been delayed.
Yes, of course, our work on Gaza's Ark keeps getting delayed. Last time in April, when we were very close to launching it, we were attacked, sabotaged, and there was an explosion in the boat. Now, of course, with the current situation, we had to stop our work on it. But we are very adamant to continue with projects like Gaza's Ark or Gaza's Ark and other similar projects, because we believe very strongly that we should be beyond just reacting to Israeli attacks or actions, and we react to them. We need to work long-term in projects, in work that takes resources, needs resources. We have to find those resources. And thankfully, people all over the world have been contributing to Gaza's Ark. Gaza's Ark, in addition to it being a political project, in addition to it being an active action, peaceful project against the blockade of Gaza, it also is a project that helps the Palestinian people by getting work happening in Gaza, by creating employment, creating movement in the economy, no matter how small it is, in a port that sees no boat building beyond simple fishing boats. And also the other aspect of it is that we are encouraging buyers all around the world to purchase products from Gaza, and they are doing that with the full knowledge that they might never see those products, but they are buying them and paying for them, and the money is going to the producers, and that's already happening. It's not something we're dreaming of. That has been happening for months now, and they have been buying products from producers in Gaza, and those products are going to be loaded on Gaza's Ark, and Gaza's Ark is going to sail out of Gaza, and hopefully the world pressure with... when the world sees what this project is and understands what Israel is trying to do, really, that this has nothing to do with security, the pressure would force Israel to let Gaza's Ark sail peacefully to the outside. And one boat is not the goal. The goal is to open the port of Gaza, the only port on the Mediterranean that's closed to the marine traffic, to marine traffic, and enable the people of Gaza to live a normal normal life. Again, within the larger context of restoring all Palestinian rights to the Palestinian people.
Absolutely. And, you know, with all this shelling and bombing, here you are doing something constructive, and it can get lost amidst all this mayhem. You know, why isn't CBC interviewing you about Gaza's Ark? There should be more coverage on that. That's a rhetorical question, Ihab.
I understand that.
Well, listen,
I understand
that. People want to probably get involved in this, especially now when we're looking for ways to help and be positive and constructive in this situation. I know you can find out information on the website GazaArk.org. You have a press release or a media release by Dr. Mona Al-Farah, and you have your own media release as well. So you're providing information on that. I'm sure there'll be opportunities to help donate to the boat or be involved in moving that forward. So is that what you want people to do to access the website and perhaps stand by for other ways in which they can help?
Absolutely. I mean, what I would really like is for people to get engaged and stay engaged. You know, I believe that our on now, off after the situation calms down type of way of supporting the Palestinian people is not going to resolve the problem. We have a duty to be on all the time, and that's why we chose to work with a long-term, very difficult, very demanding project, but we believe that that's the way out of this cycle of destruction and cycle of suffering that the Palestinian people are going through. Right now, we really can't tell the people now, tell anybody now to contribute to Gaza's Ark in these days. But we need to focus our attention right now to stopping these massacres that Israel is doing in Gaza. But yes, on the long term, please support Gaza's Ark. Please support similar projects. Please support the BDS movement. Please put as much pressure on Israel as you can in any way you can so that the justice would prevail in the Middle East. Justice would prevail for the Palestinian people.
Absolutely. And we'll be reading out a notice about a demonstration upcoming in Toronto about these events. So this is great, Ihab. Thanks for this information. We'll get this out there. We'll read out the demonstration information and how people can get involved in Gaza's Ark and other similar projects. So I want to thank you. I know right now there's a lot going on and everyone's trying to keep up or catch up. So thanks for your time. Hopefully people can visit Gaza's Ark. And I want to thank you very much for being on the program with us today.
Thank you very much.